B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show. Seven-five, the Fanatic.
Hey, y'all. Mike Missinelli. 97.5 FM, Philly's first FM sports station.
We on an uneven playing field, top of the totem pole. 97.5, Mike Missinelli Show.
Si, senor, we numero uno. And internationally large, just like the sumo. 2-6, Monday to TGIF. Mikey misses the Philly, where Hades the wide clef. I'm man of the people, ambassador. Put this bull in the ring, they turn the matadors. Our competition completely non-existent. Burning up the phone lines, record number listeners. All the biggest names and the hottest topics. A runaway train in the drive time slot. It's kinda hard to stop us. On remote, standing ovation just like an opera. The best show on earth, I feel that's very proper. The most electric sports talk, ain't no need to shock ya. Turn your radios up, Mike's ready.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Mike Missinelli Show on a Tuesday, and some interesting developments here with the Philadelphia Eagles with Jason Peters. And we had this discussion many times with a lot of football experts, including our own Sal Pal. And it was iffy whether Peters would be interested in moving over to guard. And the Eagles have made a good move. As long as he's interested in doing it, as long as he wanted to do it, they cover a lot of bases. They grab themselves a starting right guard, fill in for Brandon Brooks. And then they have a guy there in case the other kid doesn't work out at left tackle. You always have Jason Peters you can shift over there if you believe that Pryor can take that guard position. So a good move by the Eagles and a good move by Jason Peters. Who, listen, you play for a team for a really long time. You don't want to go somewhere else to play one more year. So his agent said, listen, dude, play guard one more year. You can make about $6 million max. That's not a bad way to go out. You don't have to change up anything. You don't have to find new living arrangements. So that works out for both parties, I think. So good for Jason Peters and good for the Eagles if football season, of course, even happens. And we'll talk about that a little later. So let's talk about the Ben Simmons thing because I want to solve some things here. Yesterday, we kind of scratched the surface of it. Today, I want to get in deep. And here it is. I'm reading this headline here. That's this is a story that was it. Where was this tie? In The Athletic, the Brad Botkin story. Where's that from?
That's from CBSSports.com.
CBSSports.com. And the headline is: the 76ers are shifting Ben Simmons to power forward, and it's the move that could unlock their full potential. All right, how? How's that unlock their full potential? Because all the headlines I was reading before, all the Sixers are going to be a scary team coming into playoffs. They're going to be all together, you know, in their current form. They're going to, you know, all of a sudden now their full potential is unlocked because they moved Ben Simmons to four. I don't know if it's going to work or not, and I can't make a judgment on it until I see it. But here's what I will tell you, and I heard Anthony say this, it's definitely a Hail Mary move. Because you could have very easily come back in the same form, just to believe a little more in your coaching ability, believe a little more in your players that they would figure it out, that they wouldn't be as uncomfortable this time around for whatever reason. So it is definitely a Hail Mary. You have to ask yourself the question, would they have been better off staying the same way? Here's the other thing that we need to consider. Tyrone, I know you're a shake man. Are we giving Shake a little too much credit? Are we sure about Shake? We have a very small sample. And I think from what I'm hearing from a lot of people that, wow, you got Shake on the floor. He can do this. He can do that. And you know me, I hold back. I don't have enough info to fully 100% believe in Shake. I've seen a couple of good games. I see where he's got some ability. But are we going a little too overboard on Shake being an important player for this team?
No. And the reason is because the fit with Horford was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
If the fit with Horford had been even mediocre,
mm-hmm.
then I would say you're asking too much of Shake. Because I'm looking at Shake, playoff Shake, as literally the fifth option. Okay. I'm looking at him as the fifth option. Mm-hmm. I'm not expecting him to get 39 like he did against the Clippers.
Okay.
What I'm expecting him to do is to be able to spot up and make open shots. Not be necessarily be the guy off the dribble, not do a lot of things, just mm-hmm. make an open shot. And because the fit with Simmons, Embiid, and Horford was so clunky, that's why I think it's more just about something different in his different skill set. Even if it is sort of inferior, mm-hmm. I think can still enhance the team because of the bad fit with Horford through the 60-some games of the year. That's how I'm looking at it.
That's a fair way to look at it.
But there are absolutely fans who are actually thinking he is Lou Williams, think that he is Vinnie Johnson, and we do not have enough evidence yet, as much as I love him.
Or is James Harden.
Right. We don't have any of that evidence yet. So
yes.
But I'm not looking at it like that.
We do have a lack of evidence, and I don't know if things will work with Horford, they have to try this, which goes back to the whole Hail Mary principle, that he's trying something different, and it seems to be a little more desperate. But here's the whole thing that mitigates it. And whatever you feel about Brett Brown, he is an NBA coach. Okay. He has been around the NBA for a long time. So I'm of the mindset never to disrespect someone who is actually in the profession, engaged in the profession on an everyday basis. And who am I to say that I know better than a guy who for the last 4 months has been trying to study this up? I've been trying to put together these different parameters, these different looks on what they can do to enhance their brand here as they start this season. And so I gotta sit back and go, you're the expert. And until I see otherwise, I've got to trust that this is the best thing that you can do for the Sixers. So here are my four concerns. Number one, the Hail Mary factor. Would they have been better off staying the same? It's a legit question because there are a lot of people that think yes. They you weren't thinking about this change at all. You know, you're thinking maybe that sticking, shaking the lineup, but you know maybe it's with Tobias as the four and not moving Ben out of the perimeter. So would they have been better off staying the same? Number two, Ben at the four. I love Ben Simmons. You know this, right? I love him mostly because of what he does with the ball in his hands. So Ben at the four, you're going to have to convince me, why does this benefit the Sixers more than him at the one? Three, how sure are you about Shake? And number four, and we always have to get to this because I don't know what it is. I don't know what it's going to be. And it seems like they're still like scrambling around and they have a limited amount of time to figure out what the bench rotation is going to be. So that's my fourth question. What is the rotation? Can he keep it at 8 or max 9? Because if you're going to 10 in the playoffs, you're still scrambling and you don't know what you're going to get out of guys. And that scares me a ton.
You know, of those four, number two is the one I'm most concerned about.
Why does Ben benefit the Sixers more than him at the one?
Yes, because my one, I'm trying to be optimistic about it. I'm looking at him as almost a super Draymond Green in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And Draymond does a lot of stuff, and Ben can do, he can defend just as well. He's even taller. He can do a ton of things. But Draymond is willing to shoot. And Draymond has made in his career some big three-pointers, some big shots in certain moments because he's willing to shoot. If Ben continues to be completely unwilling to shoot, it could destroy Embiid, which then destroys your offense. Because if he's completely unwilling to shoot and he's inside that three-point line, well, then why do you have to guard him? And if you're not guarding him, you're basically doubling your best offensive player, at least, every single play of the game. That's what happened against Toronto. That's what happened against Boston and with Horford. Horford and all those guys get credit. And I'm not saying that Horford or Gasol didn't do a good job on Embiid, but it was exacerbated by Ben's inability to be a threat on offense. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit scary to me. At least when he's bringing it up, he can create other things by having him off the ball. You could be playing 4-on-5 a lot, and that extra man would be doubling Joel Embiid basically every possession. That's not great playoff offense.
Okay. We will talk about all this. We will have Ben said some things today. We will let you hear. We come out of our break. What Ben Simmons had to say about this whole thing with questions from Keith Pompey and other people. But we have the Keith sound that we're going to play you. And then we just listen. You gotta read into the situation right now. I have questions. But I am of the mindset that I have to respect Brett Brown, at least for now. He's the coach. I've got no choice but to trust the guy who is the best expert, and you have to give into that. He is the expert who is coaching this team. We're on the outside. He's in the inside. So you got to give him that kind of respect that he has come up with the best plan for the Sixers to advance. All right, 610-632-0975 is how you get in. The Mike Mussinelli Show. It's on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philly. Your calls after this.
The Mike Mussinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
All right, 218, Mike Mussinelli Show, 610-632-0975. It's just to do a recap on Philly sports as we know it. All right, so the news item, Jason Peters does sign with the Eagles, one-year deal, guaranteed $3 million, can make six, signs to play right guard, which is really interesting and beneficial to the Eagles. Number two, your Philadelphia Flyers are in camp. And they're getting ready to come back. And we haven't talked that much about the Flyers. And what do you expect them to be when they come out of this whole thing? Because when they stop play, they're one of the hottest teams in the league. Can they resume as one of the hot teams in the league? Now, the Phillies are an interesting thing. Because I was thinking about this last night. Here's the reports we get from the Phillies. So-and-so has played an inter-squad game. Bryce Harper played third base for an inning. Coaches are playing in the games. Can we be any more clueless as to what's going to be with the Phillies? In spring training, we can kind of figure it out. Because they're playing real games against real competitors, right? And you're seeing the progress of a pitcher or a hitter. And it's the real-time ball. You got coaches playing in inter-squad games here. You got pitchers that aren't trying to hurt themselves. There's absolutely no competitive measure that we can look at for the Phillies.
No, but I think that's for everybody. I don't think it's just the Phillies.
Yeah, I get that. But like I'm trying to evaluate the Phillies here and what they're doing and whether they can be ready for the season, and I can't get a beat on anything at this point. You know? They're almost kind of like joke practices. That these inter-squad games where everybody hits and nobody plays the field and the coaches play the field and Bryce Harper plays third base. It's like goof time.
Well, I always thought that there was an element of spring training that was goof time anyway.
Yeah, until the games start. And then you got preseason games. You play a lot of games and you can get a measure. I have no idea what the Phillies are like. Well, Rhys Hoskins hit a home run to left field. Who did he hit that off of? I don't know. Where did that come from? Like, in a game, if I see he goes 3-for-4 and I look at the pitchers he's facing, they're like, it looks like he's on the ball. I can't tell. Baseball is like weird right now. I can't, there's no measure. Like, even basketball. You can say the same thing for basketball, but you really can't. Because once you're playing against each other, you're defending the other guy because you have to stop the other guy. It's how you're being measured. So the offensive player versus the defensive player is still a dynamic, and you're running full court. Baseball doesn't have that element.
Not at all.
No, it's just like, so how do I know?
You can't.
This is like blind trust, I swear to God.
It is. It's troubling.
Yeah, well, that's the state of affairs now. All right, the 2 o'clock hour of the Mike Misinelli Show is brought to you by Ferguson HVAC, Lyon Conklin. Attention HVAC contractors, visit Ferguson's County location on North 7th Street in Philadelphia today for equipment, parts, and supplies for every heating and cooling job. And so we go to our Twitter poll for today, brought to us by Paul B. Moyer & Sons. If you need a new mower, zero turn, or other outdoor power equipment, check out Paul B. Moyer & Sons. They have it all. Order online at paulbmoyer.com. In fact, my buddy Jake Moyer over there, he and his wife just had a baby.
I know, I saw the pictures.
Congratulations to Jake Moyer. Give him a call, congratulate him. I'm sure he's still working. They have safe contactless pickup there in Doylestown, PA. Natalie, what's today's Twitter poll?
Thanks, Mike. Today's poll, over 200 votes on this one early. Do you think Jason Peters will be able to make the transition to guard? 81% say yes, 19% say no. So they think it's going to be fine.
Oh, good. I hope it is, but it is a Hail Mary. You know, I'm looking at Brett Brown. I'm going, what is he thinking in those 4 months? He's thinking, I got to do something. I got to make an overt situation here. Like, we got to be different. We were the sixth seed. I can't very well look at myself in the mirror, come back with the same thing. If we fail, I'm definitely out. If I change something and it clicks and we go well, I'm in. Right? I'm sure he's got to think that way also.
Maybe, but he also looked at every dribble of every game. Mm-hmm. And maybe he saw something. All right, when Ben was doing mm-hmm. this, we saw him doing that. Maybe it wasn't a Hail Mary. It was just a study situation with a roster that never fully gelled and never really fit.
Yeah, but he gets kicking and screaming with this Ben at the one spot. That's the only thing. Like, how does all of a sudden he relent? He was dug in more about that. He had cement shoes on with that.
Yeah, he was. Maybe Ben being okay with it loosened him up a little bit.
All right, let's hear from Ben. All right? Yesterday we were talking about this had to be smoothed out in conversations during the pandemic, that he had to broach the subject with Ben, and they've talked about it. I assume that's still what happened. But let's hear what Ben had to say about this transition.
Today, if you know me, you know, if you put me on the floor, I'll make anything happen. Whether it's plays, buckets, stops, I'll guard anybody 1 through 5. I run the floor, I can get to the rim, I can score the ball, and I make plays happen. So wherever you put me, if I'm 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's going to happen. I don't really look at it as like a title position. That's mainly for you guys, you know, put down your articles.
All right. Now, but how did it come about? Did you come to him or did he come to you in regards to that? Like the positions?
You just got to work with different things. You got to try different things out, see if they work. Because we're not at a stage where we can be comfortable yet. And I'm still trying to figure it out myself. To where, you know, what feels comfortable, what's right for this team, you know, how we're going to win. And if it's this way, then I'm all for it. So, I mean, I've been having fun in that position, whatever you guys say, the four, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, once you see me on the floor, I'm just making plays.
He answered the question. Now, I got to think that if Ben had gone to him, Ben would have said that.
Probably, yeah.
So I got to think that this was Brett going to Ben, and he just didn't want to say it. It doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't really matter.
Ben said, if you put me on the floor, I'll make anything happen. I guess we got to trust those words, because it didn't happen when he had Jimmy Butler handling the ball in the playoffs. And I'll go, okay, well, that was a tough transition to make in mid-flight. So now this is fine.
Yeah, they're going to go through some scrimmages. They'll have the 8 games. And then you get to the playoffs and it's time to go. And he's playing off the ball. And at least he's embracing it publicly.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important step. If he gave you a lot of errors and I don't knows and maybes, then I would feel like, uh-oh, got a real problem. At least he's going to give it an honest try. And maybe he knows if it doesn't work out, it'll be a new coach. And who knows what will happen with the new coach anyway.
All right, so Sixer fans, here are the 4 things that are on my mind. I need some help. Number one is, it looks like a Hail Mary to me. And would they have been better off staying the same with Ben as the one? Number two, why does Ben at the 4 benefit the Sixers more than Ben at the 1? Number three, are we sure about Shake? And number four, what is the rotation now, and can this coach possibly keep it to eight where it should be, or nine max? Let's go, Mike, in Newtown Square. Mike, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Mike?
Hello, guys. How are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good, man. A couple quick things I just wanted to point out. Mm-hmm. I mean, give me a couple seconds here. So, I mean, obviously, I think this is like more of a hybrid four. I think Ben gets the ball in transition. He's still going to push it forward. He's great in transition. I also don't want to lose sight of the fact that we have a five that shoots threes, albeit too many more threes than I'd like him to shoot. I'd rather see him deep in the post, but he shoots threes. So I also think Ben is a really good passer, and he's also 6'10" and athletic. So he's going to grab some rebounds, find some people on the outside. I think that's a little bit maybe what Brett's thinking through this whole thing.
All right. And like I said, we were talking about this yesterday. He's going to run breaks a lot of the time. So he's going to get it off the board and go. Or somebody's going to kick it out to him and he's going to go. He's going to generate that. The way Brett was talking on his fast break, he wants him to be a streaker, which is to get down the floor, beat everybody down the floor, and somebody will get the ball to him, and he'll score the ball that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to beat going to the basket. There's not many more guys in the league who are better than going to the basket.
Yeah, but in a half-court set, now the game usually slows down a tad in the playoffs. So in a half-court set, he's got to sit down in that four position, and we'll see how they are able to work with this in the offense, in the general running of the offense. How does he work at that four?
I think he's going to work more of a, like I was mentioning, more of like a hybrid four where they're not obviously not going to find him in the post. They know he can't shoot. Other teams know he can't shoot. So it's not like they're going to be, I think Brett realizes that. They know that he can't shoot, so they're going to, keep him underneath where he can do other things. Where he can, you know what I mean?
I got you. Now, when Embiid's down low, the four has to kick out. The four usually kicks out in an open jump shot, medium-range jump shot spot, like Al Horford's done his whole life. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe he's got some tricks up his sleeve over there.
Yeah, so you're going to take that 12-footer? You tell me he's going to take the 12-footer?
I don't know. We'll find out in a few weeks.
All right. You got it, Mike. Guys. All right. That's what I see. Ben? Got to shoot that little shot.
He's got to.
Got to shoot that little shot. If I see him not shooting that little shot in the first game, my heart will fall.
I said to Ty yesterday, I feel like he might do it. He seems to have a new attitude.
Listen, you're going to be able to tell right away.
Right, I know. But it seems like he has this new attitude about him.
Yeah.
So maybe you never know. The time off and the pandemic has changed people.
I can't believe he'll shoot until I see him shoot.
Right.
So, but this is where it might be time for today's athletes they don't like to spar with one another necessarily. They're not, everybody tries to do their own thing and be an adult about it.
Mm-hmm.
If Embiid's getting double teamed and he kicks it to Ben and Ben gets an open shot, at this point, it might be time for public shame from a teammate. And I know, and the same thing would be if Embiid can't get his butt up and down the court, at this point, it might be time for somebody to say, come on, man, you're killing us. Do it in one of the eight games so it doesn't happen in the playoffs. Like, he has to take that shot. And I know they say it to him privately, and he's almost acknowledged that they say it to him privately. But it might be time on the court, like, come on, man, like J.J. Redick would get on guys all the time. It might be time for somebody. I don't know who. Maybe it's Tobias. Maybe it's Joel. Somebody needs to be the guy to say, you know what? This ain't it, man.
Joel has expressed frustration over that before, but he hasn't really said anything publicly about Ben. He's hinted, but he hasn't said publicly because I think he knows more about Ben's personality than all of us do. And
for
he
sure.
knows that that would make him further distance himself.
You're absolutely right. I believe that. But at what point, if he can't do it now, Embiid gets ripped, and some of it is, I would say, let's say 90% of it is all Joel Embiid. But even if it's 10% other stuff, I need to remove that in the playoffs this year. because I'm the one getting killed for it. When the offense stalls, they're not going to look at the guy who's not shooting. I mean, they do, but in real time, they go, why this guy lock up and beat? Meanwhile, there's a guy, Ben Simmons' man is sitting in his lap. Sitting in his lap the whole darn time, and there's another man behind him. At some point, you get what I'm saying? No, the guy's sitting in his lap.
I totally get what you're saying. Here's the way I analyze this. This is why I said a couple minutes ago that if he doesn't take first game and those little medium-range jump shots are available to him and he doesn't take it, it's over. That's why my heart's going to sink.
Right.
Because I know in past dealings with this, do you remember when he made the three-point shot and we like it was like the somebody broke the lock to the treasure chest. We're going, oh, look at that. Look how easy he did that. Right. That's going to open the treasure chest. And he didn't think about taking another shot for how long?
Yeah, for a really long time.
Exactly. So if he doesn't take that in the first game, he ain't taking it.
I have to wonder if the no crowd might play into it, because when he went to shoot last year, the crowd was, you know, it kind of turned into a little bit of a circus.
It did.
So maybe that'll alleviate some pressure.
That was the
and open him up.
Though.
No, I know, but I'm saying the scrutiny on him, I think, maybe messed with his head a little.
You could be right about that.
So I'm wondering if that'll factor in.
He does know the games are on TV and the whole world's watching.
Yeah.
He does know that. So I don't think public shaming will happen because I don't see what guy does it. And second of all, even if it does, the public shaming would make a guy like that go the other way. Like, he's not an embracer. He's a like, oh, yeah? Yeah, we'll see now. Like, he's Will Chamberlain. Oh, you think I'm taking too many shots? Guess what? In the second half, I'm not going to take a shot. Yeah. I think he's got a little of that in him.
Yeah, that's a good point. It just seems like of the two of them, you're right. When JJ did most of his yelling, it was usually at Joel. Most of his yelling didn't go towards Ben. He would even yell at Jimmy Butler last year, but he usually wasn't at Ben. I'm just trying to figure out what would be the mechanism. Let's say he has all the best intentions. I'm going to put Mike Missanelli as a psychologist, sports psychologist. What happens if he's doing it in practice and he does have all the best intentions, but he gets a brain lock just out of not doing it? How do you unlock a brain lock if he does have the best intentions?
I would think Tobias has the only clout that could do anything with him. But you said this a couple seconds ago. People have told him before.
Yeah.
Like, privately, they've told him. So, like, I don't know. He's like, Ben Simmons, I think, is a total mystery to all of us, including his teammates in the locker room, in a much the same way that Utley was a mystery to his teammates, where they just went,
you just do you.
Do you.
And 90% of the time, he's good enough to where it doesn't matter. But in the big moments, like the Toronto series you mentioned, where he didn't like being off the ball in different times, that 10% really can hurt a franchise when you're trying to win a title.
Yeah.
You need 100%. To win a title.
It's craziness. But this is the thing. You're in the four now. You're going to get that Al Horford shot. You're going to get it. So if he doesn't take it in game one, it would be... game one is so important for me.
An Indiana game.
The Indiana game where he... like, we'll see if he engages. If he doesn't engage, I go, well, if he doesn't engage in this game, when's he ever going to engage? He's not going to engage. He's not going to shoot that shot. If he doesn't shoot that shot, him at the four is a miserable failure because they get less offense from him.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Ron in West Philly. Ron, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Ron.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, Ron?
I'm fine. I was just listening to all your arguments, and you're making the argument as to why, if you have to get rid of one of either Brett Brown or Ben Simmons has got to go. Okay?
What?
You're making that argument.
No, I'm not. There's no way I would keep a head coach over a star player.
We're talking about everything we have to do with Ben Simmons to get him to play, to get the Sixers to the next stage. And we keep talking about Ben Simmons, and yet we're not talking about Brett Brown. The reason is because Ben won't shoot.
Yeah.
If Ben shoots, everybody else is better. Al Horford works better. Everybody else works better, and we're not taking the ball out of his hands in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm.
Well, of course. And you're not saying anything wrong. We've all said that he must shoot. You're just ready to give up on him. I'm not.
How many years have we heard that he was going to shoot?
Yeah, you can't give up on him. I'm sorry. The guy is such a dynamic talent and does so many other things in this league.
Until I'm not gonna... fourth quarter in the playoffs, and then we're right back to where
Listen,
10% is making it bad.
My timetable is 2 more years for this dude after this. So, you're barking at the wrong man because I'm a Ben guy and I see
it. He's not doing us any good.
Okay, in 2 years, if he doesn't shoot, then that's over. But I can't give up.
His 2.5 years.
Well, he didn't learn to shoot it. This is why I'm saying
I have
a timeline on this. For me, I'm not giving up now. I'll give up 2 years down the road if it's still the same thing.
But everything that we've talked about today, we've complained about Ben Simmons, correct?
No, we didn't complain. We're just asking him. We don't know what's going to happen. At the 4 spot here, he may decide he's going to shoot that 12-footer. We don't know yet.
He's not shooting the 12-footer and the point guard. What makes you think he's going to shoot it at the 12?
Because he's just going to be on a different space on the floor, and he's going to be able to. It's different than from the top.
We're taking the ball out of his hands now in the fourth quarter, and that's why our record isn't good, because everybody knows how to play Ben Simmons. He's not going to shoot in the half court. Get him into the half court. It's a 3-on-5.
It's a different position and different spacing when you are in the 4. You're not letting me talk.
Sorry.
He's in the 4. He pops out to get that little 12-footer rather than have to get the 12-footer up top at the perimeter. It's different.
But Mike, he has that shot. Now he doesn't take it.
You're not listening to me. The shot is going to come from a different position on the floor than up top. It's a pick-and-pop shot.
Mike, I understand that, but when you're moving the ball around and the ball is being moved, he still has the shot he doesn't take.
Listen, Ron, I don't know what's going to happen, all right? All I'm saying is that he's going to get at the 4 with Embiid posting down low and getting a lot of attention. That means somebody's not paying attention to Ben. That means he can pop to a spot to get a mini jumper. It's different than being on the top part when you drive at somebody and then you have to stop. That was unnatural for him. But coming from the 4 and moving a little bit up top in the lane area is a different mindset than at the 1 where you got the ball in your hand and it's a stop pop. He didn't know how to do that. This is not a stop pop. This is a move to an open spot. Get the ball and you're in position or just to fire.
Yeah, and that might, you're right, it might unlock things. I do have a question on the other side, and it reminds me of the first playoff Boston series.
Mm-hmm.
When one TJ McConnell ended up putting Ben Simmons on the bench for a large stretch. I'll let you answer it on the other side.
Okay.
It's my biggest fear with this new move.
Well, who are you suggesting is the TJ McConnell guy?
I'll tell you on the other side.
Neto?
No.
You're not going to bring Neto.
No, it will not be it won't be a guard.
I can't wait to hear this. All right, 610-632-0975. Mike Missinelli Show back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
2:43, Mike Missinelli Show, 97.5, The Fanatic. Booney is in shock. He just texted me. Booney, producing the show for NBC Sports Philly. He said, 2 more years, and he did this. !
Yeah.
He's 24, a 4-year NBA veteran, played nearly 250 total games. So you're willing to wait 400-plus games to make a ruling? Yes. I am, because I see the other things that are more special than anybody in the league. And that's the only way. It's the only reason I'm willing to give it that. Because I can't shirk the things he does that are more dynamic than anybody in the league. He's the fastest player in the league. He's probably the best defensive player in the league. He gets to the basket anytime he wants. Those things don't grow on trees, all right? So, yeah, and I said, I don't even know if this shot will happen next year. So my shelf life is, okay, if it doesn't happen in the year after next, then I'm out.
All right.
And I'll know it during the season. It's not like I'm going to wait till the end of the season. I'll know it in that season after next, whether it's the same thing, like in the first 10 games.
I got you.
And then I'm out.
Then you're out.
Yeah, but I won't be here anyway. So it doesn't matter.
Where are you going?
Where are you going?
Where are you going?
I'll be here 4 years.
No, it's 2 years.
It's 2 years.
2 years.
2 years. Yeah, well.
It's news to us.
Yeah, no.
And nobody told us about that. Now, mm-hmm. Now let me give you the scenario.
Uh-huh.
In that first year they made the playoffs, they beat Miami, they get to Boston. Mm-hmm. And then the coach ends up having to put T.J. McConnell in the game and Ben on the bench. Mm-hmm. And TJ played well, and Ben ended that game with 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think, oh, they would have won that game and maybe the series if they don't put Ben Simmons back in. Yeah. This is what I'm afraid of. You got Shake, you got Richardson, you got Tobias, you got Embiid.
Yeah, that's
Embiid's drawing. No, no.
It's Embiid, not going to happen.
Embiid's drawing a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. They throwing it to Ben, and Ben won't shoot. So they put in Al Horford, Ben on the bench for a spell, for rest. And then Al Horford's making that foul line shot because the leg is good. And he's made that shot millions of times in the playoffs in his life. And then they go around and mess around and win a playoff game with Ben Simmons on the bench with the five I just named without Ben Simmons. What do you do then? That's the nightmare. You win the game, but now you bruise the guy even more because you won it without him because of his refusal to shoot. But Horford has always been willing to shoot that foul line extended jump shot, and I know for a fact he'll shoot it in these playoffs coming up. He absolutely will. And now Embiid's getting double-teamed. They're doing the kick out. Then they can't, so they do a little high-low action because the three of them didn't work. Just Horford and Embiid work fine. Just Simmons and Horford fine. It's when you have the three of them. So in that scenario, what happens then? You end up winning a playoff game against somebody with Simmons on the bench because Horford was willing to shoot and Simmons wasn't willing to shoot. Just like the T.J. McConnell situation.
Yeah, I don't think that will happen at this point because here's the other thing. Okay, that might work and you might see that result. And then you're going to convince yourself that they're going to be okay for an entire series offensively that way. They're not going to be able to create enough offensive juice without him on the floor because he can get to the basket off the dribble. He can push it down the floor. So you're then saying the Sixers would have to win totally in a half-court set and then sacrifice the defensive part of it.
What I mean is not just like you weren't going to win that Boston series with T.J. McConnell.
Yeah.
But what I'm talking about is what got talked about.
Yeah.
So I'm saying in that scenario, Horford makes five or six jump shots, which is not beyond the realm of possibility. The guy has made it before. You win a game, and I'm not talking about, would the coach abandon it? What's been swirling in the city at that point? Your new point forward was on the bench, and you just beat Boston. You just beat Miami.
So as a coach, you might be right. That could swirl in the city.
That's what I mean.
But if you're the coach, you got to be stronger than that. You can't go, okay, I'm going against the grain of what people want or what worked in one game. I think you got to stick with your guns and go down with the guy.
I agree with that, but what does that do to Ben Simmons? You talk about the public shaming. Now you have a bunch of people doing the whole, if he was in the game, he won't shoot. Like, what does that do to him? That's what I wonder. That's the thing that the coach has put him right for that by making this move. Because you won't see him do some of the other stuff in that scenario because he can't play 48 minutes a game.
You're working my last nerve here.
I'm not trying to. It could happen.
That's the worst case scenario.
It could happen
right?
the way you say it, and I'm dreading it. Like I got two areas of dread. One is that he passes up the freaking 12 footer, and the other is taken to that scenario. Now, that's dread for me.
Yeah, I can just see it.
That's down six
to Miami.
Wow.
Bam's doing a good job. They're doubling Joel. You just give Ben a blow. Horford gives you a little spark. So you stick with it because you just cut the deficit from 8-2. Now you take the lead and Al Horford does that Al Horford stuff. That's the thing. When the coach does this, he has to bake that in of how to react to it and how the player might react to it if that happens. Now, Big has full control over it, of course. If he just shoots the damn 12-footer, no one cares. No one cares if he misses it. We just want him to shoot it. He could miss 100 12-footers and we wouldn't care.
This is Ben Simmons thing. It's like, as a fan, it's like making you're raising an eccentric child. You know? Like, what's going to happen tomorrow? What the, you know?
And you're just trying to get him to complete this certain task. It's like potty training or something.
And he's so good. That's then, what's frustrating. Well, he's so good.
But that's what I mean. And then when he does it, everyone's like, yay! You know? That's why I think maybe the lack of fans will help.
That's what he doesn't like, the yay part.
Right, exactly.
But he can't avoid that because he's going to be asked the questions. Whether they're fans there or not, if he starts, you know, like, well, hey, you took a couple shots. Is this a sign that you're going to take some shots? And then you go, well, you know, that's what they want. I'm not going to do it anymore. You know, that's the type of dude he is. You can't figure out what's in his head. All right, let's go Kevin in Delaware. Kevin, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Kevin.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, Mike?
What's up, Kev?
Hey, Mike, I want to talk about Ben Simmons, but first, Tyrone, your shirt yesterday, my eyes was playing tricks on me yesterday. I thought that shirt was Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris. Until Mike said something. but it's all good because
Bruce Lee, Chuck Norris.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was, Mike.
All right.
So Ben, I like the move, and what I'm looking for the first game is him getting out on the fast break and maybe get some easy dunks. And maybe that'll give him a little confidence to shoot that 10 or 12 foot jump shot. Now, if he doesn't shoot it in the first game, you know me, Mike. Mm-hmm. I take one game at a time.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it, Mike.
Okay.
So, all right.
Yeah, well, one game's going to tell me all I need to know. Oh, it is. They come out of the gate. He's in a new position. He pops into that Horford spot where he's got an open 12-footer, and then he does that turn up my back and hand it off move that he usually does. And if that happens, I go, no! Yeah. No!
I know, Mike, but I'm just going to take one game at a time. Like I said, I'm hoping he gets out on a fast break more than fast break and get some easy dunks, get some confidence.
Yeah, I hear you. Let me ask you a question on your martial arts thing. Bruce Lee versus Chuck Norris, who wins that?
Bruce.
Chuck Norris versus Steven Seagal in that nunchuck scene with the pool table versus the guy known as Sticks. All right, get him, Sticks. You ever that scene? Steven Seagal? No?
I'll have to go with Chuck.
You going Chuck over Seagal?
Yeah.
All right. Now, you know what scene I'm talking about. Which one? What Seagal movie was that where he was, who killed Bobby Lupo?
Oh, the, wait a minute. Was it Time to Kill?
No, Mark, it wasn't Time to Kill.
It wasn't Marked for Death.
No, it wasn't Marked for Death. That was Screwface, right?
Yeah,
Marked
that was Screwface. That's my favorite. Scrolls. Yeah, that's my favorite one.
what was the villain in that? The guy, Richie, what's his name, Richie? I can't remember his last name. But you know the scene I'm talking about. Yeah. He goes into the pool hall, and he beats every guy up. He puts the pool balls in a sock, and he rails some dudes with that. And then in the end, they go, all right, go get him, Sticks. And the Asian guy grabs the pool cue. And comes after
that was Out for Justice.
Out for Justice, yes,
yeah, that's what.
And he kicks Sticks' his ass. And I gotta be honest with you, Seagal was pretty good with the sticks.
Yeah,
he had the sticks. He's battling the dude. So Chuck Norris versus Seagal at his best in that pool hall battle.
I think he. You know what? He might kick Chuck Norris's butt.
Yeah,
he might.
You got Seagal in that?
Yeah, he was in shape then. See, he ate his way out of karate. But up until then, he was still pretty lethal.
No, but he was marvelous in that scene.
Yeah, no,
I go, man, that's dazzling what he's doing with the stick.
That's before the breakup. I think he never was the same after the divorce.
Oh, it was Kelly?
Yeah, he never was the same.
Kelly Brock Rose.
Over eight, and that was it for him. Can't have him as a movie star all puffy like that.
No. All right, 610-632. 800-919-0975. Mike Mussinelli Show, back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.